So, herzlich willkommen zum Zwangskast.
Grüezi.
58. Wie immer da, der Ferdi.
Grüezi. Wie immer da, der Thomas Ritter.
Grüezi miteinander.
Ja.
Ja. Es ist heiß.
Ja, es ist wirklich heiß.
Ja, wir schwitzen. Und wir haben einen Gast.
Yay!
Und. Ja.
Hallo.
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 Today we have a very special guest.
Yes.
It's our first English speaking fellow. It's Jeremy Seitz. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here. I tried my best to speak together.
Ja, unser Gast ist ein Amerikaner. Das heisst,
Er kann nichts dafür.
Das heisst, wir müssen wechseln auf Englisch. Und das machen wir jetzt. So, welcome.
Thank you.
To the show.
Thanks very
much.
You're
our first English guest.
I am honored. I'm more than honored to be your first English speaking guest.
Nice.
Or willing to speak English.
The honor is ours. Yeah.
Nice.
Thanks.
So maybe we should say where we know you from. We know you from work.
Actually, yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
It is true. Although I think we went to some conferences together. Once or twice,
yeah.
Perhaps.
Actually, yeah. Perhaps. We were talking about it even here, about Barcelona.
Yes.
That was one too.
Oh, you didn't manage to go to the second
Actually,
Barucho?
That's not, yeah.
That
I
we
was
went
not
to?
There.
Were you no. there at the first one?
No, that was not me. That
oh,
was
shit.
my twin brother, Alfred, who was
right.
there. But come to think of it, we haven't been at any conferences together.
Okay.
It's actually, no, it's possible, but they would have been like local conferences.
Yeah.
Very
yes.
local yes. conferences.
Very local so indeed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like in the,
you could
in
even
the,
say local search conferences.
Yeah. Well, we search for local conferences together, and occasionally we find one we can go to that
yeah,
matches
exactly.
our work schedule.
Yeah.
And we end up at the same place.
Yeah,
and there
right.
it is. It's true.
That's how we found you.
Yes.
That's great.
That's true.
Yeah. So, but you talked about going to the Congress in Germany.
Yes.
The Chaos Communication Congress.
Yes.
So are you finally coming?
Oh my gosh.
Like you were
on the record.
You were
wow.
No, you were supposed to come
wow.
to 32.
Really?
Waiting for this
you
for
were,
weeks.
You were
That's right.
supposed to come to the camp.
That's true.
And now you're supposed to come to the 33rd C3.
That's true. Yes.
December.
Yes. Yeah. I I promise you I will definitely consider it.
Yeah.
No,
all I can hope for.
No.
It's good.
I love the conferences. The first camp I went to was in 2007, and I went again in 2011, and I went to the one in Holland, and I even took my family two times. But the Congress happens during the holidays, and
nice.
Unfortunately I have these things called, you know, family members.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah,
occasionally
yeah, I know.
They have other conferences they want to go to at the same time, so you know, it's just difficult. But I think this year it might work out. I'm going to give it a shot.
Okay.
But speaking of conferences, you know that this weekend is the Hope Conference in New York City.
Hope,
which is Hackers on Planet Earth,
yeah.
and it's put on by the 2600 guys plus a bunch of other people in New York. And before I moved to Switzerland, I used to run in those circles of people and enjoy those conferences because I was too afraid to go to Europe because Americans, you know. And anyway, the reason I mention it is because the Hope Conference is happening this weekend and they stream the whole thing live.
Oh. Okay.
And it's for 3 days. And my tradition is at this time of the year, I run it on the TV or the Beamer 24/7 and just watch. Have these talks running all the time. And it's really good because many of the people at that conference will end up at the Congress.
Ah.
So, or they went to last year's Congress and they're doing their talks again in the summer in New York. So,
nice.
So I don't always get to see them live, but I try to see them anyway. So.
Nice. So that's happening now?
Yes.
Cool.
No, this weekend. It starts Friday. So
okay,
tomorrow.
So this weekend. Yeah.
Well,
okay.
For
11th Hope.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, cool.
And the speaker schedule is insane. It's everything from DNA hacking to, you know, security topics and
Mitch Altman, of course.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. He's always at the Congress as well.
He's always there.
I've met him a few times.
He's me too. I took
never
a,
heard
I was
of it, actually.
Never heard of it,
no.
Really.
Hope. Really? I've heard of it.
I can't remember.
Okay. I mean, it's like by the same token, people in the States often haven't heard of the Congress.
Oh, yeah. Really?
So yeah. It's like,
but I mean, the Congress is by now it's a huge thing, really.
Yes, I think this is changing.
Yeah,
yeah, that's true.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, we meet when we go to the Congress. We meet people from everywhere all the time. So it's really it's not a European or a German thing, not anymore by a long shot. Everyone's there really from the of hacker.
Yeah.
People wait the whole year to announce their crazy discoveries or hacks or whatever. Yeah. They sit on them quietly until they can go there and make a big splash.
So that's it's really like the American Congress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
but
so.
Who organizes it?
I don't know who's doing it now, but traditionally it was the guys who were in charge of 2600 magazine and who ran the radio show in New York on WBAI, which was the hacker radio show. It was once a week. And a good friend of mine was participating in that show for many years and also helped organize the conference and wrote me into it. I was like, what is this thing? It looks like a bunch of crazy people. I don't know if I want to go to that. And then I went, and it was, of course, awesome. And I learned how to solder and got interested in all kinds of crazy things.
Yeah, I'm also telling everyone who would listen to go to the Congress. Like, just anyone, if you're even remotely interested in some way in something that could be going on there, then you absolutely should go, because it's like people are always, when they go for the first time, they're always amazed at how diverse it is. Like, it's not just the stereotypical security hackers talking out of their arse, like with their crazy discoveries and everything, and you go like, I know totally what that is. But
we have exploited a bizarre bug in RSA, which allows us to cryptographically sign our names onto this. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
But it's actually diverse topics, like you say. It's sometimes political topics. It's sometimes scientific topics. It's sometimes behavioral science, psychology, social engineering, lockpicking, electronics, artificial intelligence.
Lots of artsy stuff.
Yes.
Always. Like interactive dance. Art and stuff like that. Yeah.
Smiling contests.
That's right.
Example, yeah.
Yeah.
Smiling contests.
Spoons, where they do the spoons, scraping them together and musically.
Yeah.
Yes. Improvisational silence.
No, so yeah,
and just tons of toys usually and installations and stuff.
And all the crazy people who like produce homebrew kits and books and hacking materials or things, they're like selling them there, and you can buy something from someone and then actually go talk to the guy who designed it, which I find is really fun. So yeah, definitely worth a visit, and not that expensive compared to a lot of conferences.
Exactly.
Really not that bad.
It's pretty good. We actually recorded an episode from Congress, I think 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
It was 31st, I think, 31C3.
No.
Yes.
Yeah, that could be.
So it should be 1.5 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay.
We were actually there, and there was a podcasting
Podcasting is taking off there as well. There's they have a stage where all the big podcasters, do their shows, and then, 200 people turn up and they do them in front of the audience, record something.
Nice.
But they also have small tables at the sides with proper equipment, so you can just come there, plug in a USB stick or an SD card or anything, hit record and go and record your show on the Congress. Like,
oh, that's great.
Without any setup.
So you could randomly interview people there.
Yeah, absolutely.
You that's can. Awesome.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
That's very nice.
Indeed.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I will try to go this year. I think I have a better shot this year than I did last year. So
good, good. I'm glad. I'm glad you're even considering it. That's already nice.
As I told you last time,
I have to introduce you to some people who you would like. So
excellent.
Yeah, they will be there. So you should come. And also bring your family. I mean, you know how
it's
the
actually
event
very
is.
Kid friendly. I have to say,
yes,
it's, yeah,
yes.
They have.
It is absolutely.
They have actually a special floor just for the kids. I think.
Yes,
I took my family last time to the camp, and I was surprised. My wife kind of went kicking and screaming because she was like, "Oh my God, the hacker conference! What's wrong with you?"
Yeah.
And then she immediately got interested in talks about, genetically modified foods and world agricultural problems interactive electronic fashion and just crazy topics that were not about coding or breaking cryptographic keys or things like that. There's something for everybody in general, which is cool.
Absolutely.
Just lots of smart people.
Yes, that's right. Like I was thinking, like if someone were to, bomb the Congress, they could really, they could really harm some big part of the economy, actually.
Yes. It could be the next Dark Ages.
Getting rid of
actually
a bunch of very intelligent people.
Yes. Like that. Many corporations would suddenly stop functioning, probably.
Yeah.
It's like a Fight Club scenario.
That's right.
Really?
Actually.
But it's actually true. Yeah, it's really... I mean, there's weird people, as usual, but they're still friendly somehow. Yeah. Or they just don't bother you. That's the basic thing.
Like, don't be an asshole is like one of the main things that people seem to go by.
Yeah.
They really stick to that
thing. Unless it's the cops. They don't seem to follow that rule.
The cops?
All the time.
I don't know. I haven't had any incidences with the cops.
At the Hope Conference, there were a couple of cases of people getting arrested on stage for they were talking
arrested
about.
Arrested on
yes,
stage?
Yes, arrested on stage and dragged away. Yeah, it happened a couple of times. But you know, whatever. Not here. It doesn't happen here. Come on. We're talking about America.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, should we get into feedback?
I think we should.
Okay.
Are you going to cause feedback?
No.
Oh,
no,
okay.
Because I was going to
take
my
headphones off in that case.
No, it's fine.
No, we actually have some comments.
Yeah, we
from last episode.
Yeah, we always go a bit through the most important comments from last episode. But we only have one from last episode, I believe.
It's actually two.
Two?
Yeah.
Really?
I can refresh.
Oh, yeah. That's right. You approved one more.
Exactly.
I never get the emails when some of them come in.
I was supposed to do that, but I forgot.
Okay, that's fine. It's fine.
Whatever. Sorry, Lucas.
Okay.
It's actually just some random comments about Huffduffer. You know Huffduffer? Never heard of it.
No.
Yeah, we were talking about personalized podcast feeds last time because, apparently it's still too hard to subscribe to a podcast.
Okay.
And there was some hint about Huffduffer, which is some kind of service where you can actually collect feeds and make your own podcast feeds.
Oh, yeah, like if you have some piece of audio that's somewhere on the internet through Huffduffer, you can put it into an RSS feed and then you can... basically, yeah, subscribe to it on whatever device and so on.
Okay.
Yeah, so it doesn't need to be
useful for that.
Yeah. So it's quite nice if you want to listen to some kind of audio.
Nice.
Yeah, that's good. And also about the Vasa Museum, actually, it's been a while since I read that.
I didn't even read it yet.
yeah, but...
that's fine.
But actually, we were in Stockholm last time. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of the Vasa?
No.
That's the oldest ship, I think, that is still... existing,
preserved. Oh, that one.
Yeah, you don't know it.
No, I've never been to Stockholm. Yeah. I've only been to Malmo. I didn't that far.
Yeah, but yeah, I can show you a picture. It's like this huge ancient ship from 1600 something.
Yeah. And it's like perfectly preserved.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It actually sunk on its first...
On its maiden voyage, it sunk like 20 minutes after it took off from the port of Stockholm. It sank, and it lay down there in the harbor for like 333 years.
Yes.
So, and in the 60s, they actually brought it up.
Yeah.
And now they built this whole museum around it. So it's basically this.
Wow.
This ship is the centerpiece of the museum.
That sounds amazing.
And it's amazing. Like if you're ever in Stockholm, absolutely go to that museum because it's one of the best really museums I've been to.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we talked about that a bit and we should go to the Het Scheepvaart Museum in Amsterdam.
Yeah, apparently.
Apparently, because that's also a good museum. Is one of our commenters said that. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is good. Yeah, but that was great. So great. Because I was talking about... actually, there was some part of the museum where they were talking about life on the ship itself. So how stuff worked, how they lived, actually. And it was so amazing. I actually really enjoyed that. That was basically... There seems to be a museum in Amsterdam that's mainly focused on the life on a ship, basically.
Wow.
So, yeah. That's great.
I like it when you can go into an environment like that where, like in New York City, they have the Intrepid Museum, which is
what's that?
It's a aircraft carrier that's docked off of the coast of Manhattan.
Okay.
And you can go into it and go around it, and it's something normally people would never get to do. And on the one hand, you think, yeah, it's a museum. That sounds kind of cheesy, planes, boring. But then you actually get there and you realize this is like you get to go into the mindset of what it would be like to live on such a gigantic vessel and everything, and yeah, it's very cool stuff. It's really nice.
It's great. Yeah, I think I anyway have to go to Amsterdam. It's really
I
love the city.
I was there recently, like not that long ago, and still I think I should go back.
That's an awesome city.
Yeah,
it really
it is.
I have to go back.
Bicycles.
When I was there, I thought, yeah, I could live here.
Yeah,
no problem.
It's great. It is great with the canals and the bikes and everything.
Yeah. I've been there one day, actually. And that was in 2006, I think. So it was actually 10 years ago. Crazy. Wow. One day. And we just basically came there in the afternoon, slept there, and then, went back to France.
Actually, the last camp that I went to in Holland was right there, and I met some friends at the camp, and then we went and stayed in Amsterdam for a few days.
Yeah,
it was really great. It's nice in the summer. I went one time in February. I'm not sure I'd want to go in the winter, but
yeah,
it can be a bit rainy and cold.
But
it is really awesome.
That's great. There was some other comment actually from Bernhard, and he thanked us for only talking for 3 minutes about Elon Musk.
I guess that's a regular topic.
Yes, it's very regular. Yes. It's the most regular topic we have.
Yeah. Actually.
Speaking of him, did you hear? No, I'm just kidding.
You totally can go into it because it's actually a topic again.
Yes, it is a topic again. Lots of things happened.
Yeah.
I really want to talk about it.
Just go ahead.
But yeah.
Do it.
Well, yes. We'll get into that later, I think.
I think you can do it now.
Really?
Yeah.
Now?
Yeah.
Okay. Sure.
Go for it.
All right. To put a chapter mark. So, okay. So, yeah, there was the launch of CRS-9 earlier this week, which is for SpaceX, which is the ninth mission of the commercial resupply services for ISS. So they flew to ISS again. And their Dragon capsule docked with the ISS like yesterday or day before yesterday. So, yeah, so... It took a few days to get there, but yeah, they're back at the ISS, and they actually succeeded in landing again. The first stage of the rocket landed, on the ground this time, not on a ship, but properly on the ground. Because when they do the missions to the ISS, because ISS flies relatively low, like it's not, they don't need all the fuel they can have in the rocket. So they can actually spend the fuel to come back to the land instead of landing in the sea, because they, when they start, they fly over the sea, right?
Right.
Then they need to come back,
yes,
in the same direction, pretty much,
yes,
to land there again on land.
Yes, which is just too complicated, frankly. Yeah. You know, I think you ever play mini golf, and you know, you go to this one thing where it's like you could just hit the ball in straight, but you could go on this path where you have to go like around a tree and through a little gerbil wheel, and then you end up doing that for like an hour just because you're like, I have to do this. I have to actually get it like exactly right. And I feel like that's maybe what Musk did with this whole water landing.
Yeah.
They're like, you know, his chief engineer is like, Elon, you know, we really should just go for the land thing. He's like, no, come on. One more time. One more. I swear. This is the last time. Yeah. One more time. Please. Let's try it.
Yeah.
They're like, oh God, he won't give it up. And it's like,
So it must be, I think it must be way harder to land on this on the sea than on land.
Clearly, yeah.
But I mean, they succeeded in both, so I guess. I mean, it's nice how it like almost became normal by now that they land those things again, which was crazy a few years ago.
Several attempts successful in a row, which is great.
Yeah.
Because they need to win more. So yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. Right. So, and the other thing that that was in the news is Elon Musk revealed his master plan too. So the first master plan was to first produce, you know, a small volume, highly priced car, but just to get them off the ground and so on, and then do a less highly priced one that has a bit more volume and so on. And now the third iteration is to do a cheap car, sort of cheap car, for the mass market, basically. And yeah, he revealed his second master plan now. I will link the original article, but where he announced it on the blog of Tesla. The summary of it is basically, he wants to create stunning solar roofs with seamlessly integrated battery storage. And for that, he wants to merge Solar City, which is his other, or the other startup that basically his cousin owns or something. And he wants to merge that with Tesla. So that was one of the big announcements that what was going to happen. And then the second thing is he wants to expand the electric vehicle product line to address all major segments. So that means that eventually Tesla wants to produce trucks and buses.
Naturally, buses. Yeah, this makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Especially in the U.S.
In the U.S. and also
for the trucks.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about this. I read an article about how they were doing trials with electric buses, and buses are so large and they have so much capacity where you could put batteries, and they take so long to fuel that, you know, if you can run a bus on a battery, and I live in Lucerne, and when I look at all of the tram lines everywhere hanging, these power lines hanging everywhere to power the buses, and you realize that the city has to maintain this infrastructure to send electricity to this power and keep it maintained and everything. Mm-hmm. It's such an attractive option to have a bus that you charge overnight or rapid charge, and it just works. And yeah, it's beautiful. It's a perfect market.
Yeah, it really
is. Yeah, true. I mean, it's also huge for autonomous driving, right? Because especially with those trucks, I mean, there's so many trucks on the roads, and there's so much potential to just automate that.
Yeah.
And also highway driving is one of the easier things for a car to do autonomously.
Yes.
So it makes total sense for them to move into that direction. So in 2017, they want to announce, or they want to show some models of those cars they want to produce.
Makes sense. Vehicles. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did he talk about Hyperloop?
No, he didn't.
That's weird.
Yeah, it's weird. I think he should talk some more about Hyperloop.
I think somebody should.
That's right.
You can just see he's like, you know, oh man. Wow. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's some development in that direction. I think there's two startups now that actually want to build the thing properly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still very expensive to do, so they will. I'm guessing they're looking for, you know, capital to actually pull it off. But yeah, you know, so it might still happen.
Well, first he's got to fire his mafia friends, you know, which is going to take some doing. So he'll do that after all the solar panels are installed and and everything else is working.
I mean, it's not like he has much on his plate anyway, you know.
No, he's he's practically retired.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Sure. I don't think he reads Reddit.
Yeah.
Maybe not. I'm just guessing. I mean, maybe he does, but he just does it really quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, he has these insane speed reading capabilities probably.
So he reads it in his Tesla on the big screen.
Yeah, while driving. So the other thing they announced is they want to develop a self-driving capability that is 10 times safer than manual via massive fleet learning. So they do some extensive machine learning stuff, apparently, collect a lot of data with all the Teslas that are on the roads, and they want to make it 10 times safer than actually driving manuals in order, and then they will move out of beta, he said.
This actually concerns me because I think machine learning is the wrong thing to do for driving. Because why? I can think of many cases where, you know, everybody screws up in the same place.
Yeah.
Just because they're confused by something, like a sign is bad or an intersection is particularly badly marked, and then, you know, the cars learn to basically do the wrong thing.
True, yeah, true.
So maybe your car honks because everyone honks at that intersection.
And it's like, you know, you're randomly going down the street on autopilot and you pass a beautiful woman and like the engine starts roaring and, you know, the windows roll down. You're like, what the hell is going on? I'm really sorry. Or like, you know, you see a Ford Fiesta and your car speeds up and starts tailgating it like 6 inches away. And you're like, stop, like, I don't want to do this. But it learned it.
Knows what to do. Yeah, that might happen. I don't know. We'll see what comes of it. Not so sure about it.
But I love the idea.
Yeah,
that it learns the wrong thing.
Yes,
it's like it must have learned it from an old person. It's very slow. Once it gets dark, my car is really slow. I don't know why.
Right. Exactly. It just learns terrible habits of other drivers.
Yeah.
So that plan obviously assumes that, you know, in general people are relatively good drivers, which might not be true. I don't know.
How do you judge a good driver when you have a fully autonomous system? Like, the only factor you can think of is, did you get a ticket or did you die?
Yeah.
Everything else is fine.
True. That's the fitness function. Yeah. Lift through it.
Yes.
Check.
Right. Drove on neighbor's lawn. Doesn't matter. Backed into a bush. Fine. But, you know, car not damaged. Driver's still alive. Everything's great. It's no problem.
That's right.
Yeah. But, yeah, I don't know what they really want to do with that. It still seems like, I don't know, that just enough sensors will be enough, just,
yes,
and data.
But I think they're right. I mean, it's totally a solvable problem and it will just take some time.
Of course,
so, it's solvable.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, they need to go Amazon Turk on the whole solution. Like your car should be basically drivable and it should have a confidence factor. So you're going down the road and it knows the area and the sensors are working, everything's fine. And then something happens where the car's like, I'm a bit confused.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what's happening, or maybe the sensor data is abnormal. And then some dude who's like sitting in Canada takes over with a camera and like a plastic steering wheel.
Yeah.
And he's suddenly driving the car. because he can actually make decisions like a human, but he just drives. He sits in this chair all day with a plastic wheel and a camera, and he's driving people's cars for 10 seconds at a time. He's just like, he just sees like an intersection and there's a baby and he's like, okay, don't go. And then he sees like, you know, a lane change. He's like, oh, I better turn. And and like, you're just switching from one moment to the next with new scenarios. And they hire like the best drivers they could ever get. They get all the New York City cab drivers who lost their jobs because of Uber. And they go to Canada and they just drive people's cars remotely for where the algorithm isn't very good.
That would be a great.
This could actually be cheaper and even safer than what Tesla's doing with like code, perhaps.
Yeah.
So
I like the idea, but just imagine there's a queue and your car just stops like waiting for a remote driver.
No, it'd have to be instantaneous.
Yeah, of course. But like, I mean, if you don't have anyone who could drive your car right now.
That's true. Then it would just,
it would just stop.
It would just completely stop in the middle of the highway.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then everyone is honking and then it learns that. And
Well, I mean, it does tell you, like, please take over. I find that really interesting. Like,
does you it
need
do that?
It. Yeah. And in certain situations, it would be like, you need to take over. And, you know. I mean, if you're in a car and somebody tells you you need to take over, you generally know what to do, even if you're like half asleep.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Usually you are. I just have this picture in my mind. It's like, I can't let you drive, Dave.
Or maybe like it's driving and you touch the wheel and it's like, no, I've got it. Nope.
You sure you want to go there? I don't think so.
Stop. Let go.
Yeah. And then if you don't let off and just insist on keep driving, it just slows down and parks your car and doesn't go anywhere anymore.
Just stop.
unless you don't touch the wheel anymore and let it do its thing.
I worry that people will get too lazy with autonomous driving because I was in a car once that was semi-autonomous where it would like keep the car in the lane.
In the lane.
So you're like on cruise control and the car is keeping in the lane. And it was kind of nice. You know, my feet off of the gas pedal. Okay. I've done that before. Everybody's done that. But then your hands off of the wheel is pretty crazy. But then after you get used to it, like on a long trip, you're like, this is really great. And then it's like, please take over. And you're like, oh my God, like what has happened? You know, and maybe nothing's happened. Maybe something has. But you get used to this thing commanding you.
Yeah.
And I think back to the story of my mother, you know, when my mother would go driving around with her mom and they're sitting at a stoplight talking and all of a sudden my grandmother would say to her, you can go. And she would just start driving right into an accident because like she just trusted her grandmother.
Wow. Whose
vision was really bad at age 80. And she's like, you can go. And she's just like, all right. Thinking, you know. Maybe you just learn to trust the thing too much. It's a bit scary.
Yeah.
True. There's lots of psychology that goes into all of this. It's not just a human and a machine, but they actually have to interact in some way.
It's a relationship.
It's a relationship.
It's an actual relationship.
It's interesting. Yeah. And the last thing basically he knows is to enable, they want to enable your car to make money for you when you aren't using it. What that basically means is when they've basically done the autonomous stuff, when they're basically, when it's good enough, then you can basically rent out your car during the day. And it will be back there when you step out of the office or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Your car will be parked there again.
That's pretty great.
But in between, when you're in the office working, basically your car will be anywhere and chauffeuring people around and whatever.
This makes total sense.
It makes a lot of sense
until you get home and your car pulls up in the driveway and there's like a drunk teenager sleeping in the back. And you're like, oh man.
I didn't want to know that.
That's really wrong. Like, take this kid home now. I think it's inevitable. I mean, my daughter's 10. I told her I don't think she's ever going to get a driver's license. I think in 10 years, the idea of actually getting a license and owning a car is something that most people won't need to consider.
Yeah.
And it sounds like that's too fast, but think about how quickly mobile phones took over.
I totally believe
and
that.
And personal computers, and like everyone's like, oh, no, no. You know.
So I'm definitely not getting a driver's license now.
You're too late.
Yes. I can just wait. It's no problem.
Yeah,
I mean, there's still the legal shit, you know. I mean, the legal system is slow.
Yeah,
and basically, it will probably, for some time at least, you will be required to actually be able to drive the car, even if you can't, even if it's totally autonomous.
Right.
That will probably be a thing.
Or maybe the insurance companies will rate your driving behavior based on what the car reports. So like,
if that's also going to happen.
Yeah,
basically, definitely, pretty much. Yeah,
yeah. But
you can already buy like boxes from insurances, or get boxes from insurance that you put into your car.
Yeah,
and they're, you know, reading the sensors and everything, and then basically your rate gets adjusted.
Wow.
That, yeah, it's a thing.
I'll have to remember not to do that.
That's crazy. But I mean, anyway, when I ordered my first Uber, I was really amazed how smooth it was. And I was, when I entered the car, I was like, this is actually not far away from autonomous driving. I mean, that there's a guy actually reading on the mobile phone where I am and driving there. I mean, we're so close to just automating that away.
Yeah.
And I mean, he didn't have to ask me where I have to go. I entered that manually, right? And he was like, do you want to go there? I was like, yeah, I want to. And then he drove away.
Yeah.
So this is really, it's not far away. We can already
also
do
the
it.
The payment, right? You just get out of the car and it's paid. Like, you don't even mess around with money anymore, and nothing.
Yeah. And I was really surprised. I was like, okay, this is pretty crazy.
I mean, it's such a positive thing that it's going to happen. Like, there's no question about it. But the only thing that makes me sad is there's just not going to be any reason to have trains anymore.
Hmm.
Like, I can't think of how you could justify operating and keeping trains when these autonomous vehicles get better and better and they're electric. And, you know, I think they're just going to pave over the tracks and turn them into like one-way roads or something.
You're probably
like,
right, yeah. It makes me sad too, but
yeah,
it's probably
very
going
sad,
to be.
But although in Switzerland, you know, in 2200, they will still have privately owned steam trains.
Yeah,
they'll just cost a lot to ride on.
But you know, 100 years ago, some different Jeremy said, I'm really sad that the horse carriage is going away with these
no more carriages. I love horses. They smell good.
Yeah, they're nice. You get some
nice
fresh air.
Yeah, exactly. They're your best friend.
Yeah.
It's not as hectic as driving a car. It's more relaxed.
And after they get too old, you know, you can eat them.
That's true.
They're useful.
Yeah. I just imagine that. It's like, I'm really sad that the horses have to go.
Actually, when you see pictures of like a major city in the late 1800s, I don't think people thought that. When they had all this horse traffic everywhere, the cities were just unbelievably nasty.
Yeah, and shit everywhere.
And that's why people put up with the early automobiles, because they were like, yes, they're loud and they smell horrible, but dude, do you remember what we had before?
Yeah. Although, did you know that there was... they had electric cars in the beginning. They were.
I heard this.
Yeah. This I thought this is a hoax of some kind, but it's actually really true.
But they had to charge them with lightning bolts.
Yeah, apparently. I don't know how it was.
Like, it was crazy. Like, it was not practical.
No,
not whatsoever.
But like, it worked.
They had
batteries. It kind
of
worked,
of course.
Yeah.
But not very well. And then
I mean, it also makes total sense, right?
I mean,
it's the. I mean, it's the closer solution to power your car by the same thing that gives you light in your living room.
Yeah.
Like, why the hell not?
Yeah, people were really thinking that it's power for everything that we have, right?
Yeah.
And then they found dinosaur liquid. It's like, this is great.
Yes.
And then, like, in the 50s, the atomic era and everything, atomic whatever, nuclear.
Oh, yeah. Nuclear cars.
And they thought about nuclear cars and stuff like
and
that.
Planes.
Yeah,
everything's atomic.
Yeah.
Atomic energy is the future. You will all live with atomic energy.
Yeah.
But actually, what I find really fascinating is the whole thing about batteries. I read some futurist post on Reddit a while ago that was talking about the idea of rechargeable liquid. That you take batteries and you take the contents of batteries are basically like a gel. But if you could, and there have been some experiments, you take a liquid and you make it chargeable and you could pump that into a tank and then use it to power a car. And then when the energy is spent, you pump it out, you go to the gas station and pump more charged liquid in. Now, if they could actually get this working efficiently, it would perfectly match the distribution methods that we have today.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't have to ship the fossil fuels around.
Yeah.
However, I think before that happens, they'll probably get rapid charging and capacity so good that it won't matter.
That's true, yeah.
And the only thing that's missing is infrastructure. Like when I look around Switzerland, I see a lot of Teslas, but I don't see a lot of charging stations.
Yeah.
And okay, in Zurich you have quite a few, but when you go to smaller towns and you know medium sized towns, you don't see them that often.
That's true.
And people usually you need to have a garage and you need to have a good power source and they're high end cars.
Yeah.
And when they release the Model 3, and your average person on the street wants to have one, where the hell are you going to charge it? They're going to have to do a lot of infrastructure work, actually, to make that happen.
Yeah, there was a talk at 31C3, no, 32C3, I think, about, it was called a new kind of public infrastructure, about basically those charging stations and that kind of stuff, which was really interesting. Like, yeah, I mean, there's also... Yeah, it was by this guy who apparently made quite some research into all of this, and like there's already like, you know, five different competing standards of how you connect your car to this charging station and whatever. I mean, for that's not the case for conventional cars, you know. It's really
No, but I think in the beginning they had lots of different
attempts at things.
It's still early, but. But I think, you know, the cool thing will be if you could, you're going down the highway and your car is running low on battery and you just press a button and it pulls up to the next truck, which is charging you and towing you at the same time.
Or there's just power banks, actual truck power banks around that charge you.
Yes, it's just driving around with charged batteries.
Yeah.
This could be, you know, who knows?
Yeah, why not?
Because the problem with electric cars is the range, and the range only becomes an issue when you're traveling between states or countries long distance.
Which is why I thought last time, it's like if you want to go far, just pull a battery with you, like a
that's like a trailer.
Yeah, like a trailer, right?
Yeah.
But a small one, you know.
Yes.
Just a small one, attach it to your Tesla, like a power bank on your phone.
Yes. Which begs the question, why does the Tesla have so much damn trunk space if you could just put in more batteries?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to travel, you actually want to put your bags
But they should have the option to put in, like, you know,
more batteries,
an extra 200 kilometers of power
I'm pretty sure that there will be some kind of power bank for a Tesla.
Yeah.
Like, I want to drive, I don't know, 400 kilometers more than usual. Just put your power bank in. And
I mean, especially with the Model X, you know.
Yeah.
The Model X even has the capability of, you know, connecting a trailer and everything. I think you can't do that with the Model S. It doesn't even have the connector in the back for a trailer. But with the Model X, it can do that. And it's powerful enough to actually pull a huge trailer if you want. So,
yeah. I stopped by the Tesla store in Zurich a while ago, and I was just astounded at how much space there was in the car, compared to regular cars. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's quite something.
I haven't seen a Model X yet in real life.
No, me neither.
Do they have one at the Tesla store?
I didn't see one, no.
Okay. Because I absolutely want to look at one.
I think they're still quite rare over here.
Yeah, well, I don't think anyone really has
but
one
yet.
But
I think Switzerland is one of the leading European countries, if not the leading European countries, with Teslas per capita. Like, there's more Teslas being bought and owned here by
Norway,
population.
Norway, which is very, very high up as well.
I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
Well, at least we didn't talk about Tesla.
No, at least not that. No, yeah.
just a little bit.
I mean, if you want to hear some more people talk some more about Tesla, there's a podcast for that called Talking Tesla.
Wow.
That I wanted to mention as well. They're not only talking about Tesla, but general Musk stuff, yeah, basically. So, yeah.
So it's, yeah, basically competition.
Yes, it's competition, yeah. Basically. But we have the 3 minutes maximum.
Yeah.
So
maximum. Very nice.
Which we just overshot by 16 minutes.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Mm. It's fine. It's totally fine. Totally fine. Actually, I want to talk about that one thing. It's actually down there. But I read an article about actually Sion. You know Sion, the Swiss city of, mm-hmm, Sion in Wallis? They actually now have a test, how you call that, test track for an electric bus.
Really?
Yeah, they do. They did that with APFL.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's basically just a trial. It's actually free. You can just ride it. I don't know where it drives, but it's in Sion somewhere.
Is it autonomous?
Yes, completely. Wow. There's a guy in there just for safety.
Yes.
Apparently, but it's
free. But he's reading 20 minutes.
Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. That in the case of emergency, he won't be in a state where he can, yeah, actually, yes, take over the vehicle.
He's playing Candy Crush.
Exactly. Pokemon Go.
At the front of the bus. I got one.
Yeah.
Go Mystic.
So that was an article, and I think it's quite nice. The only thing is, I mean, it's free. That's the good part. The bad part is it only goes 20 kilometers per hour, which is pretty slow.
Quite slow. Does it actually go in the city or just around a track?
They don't mention it here.
Hmm.
I think it's actually on the road, so it makes sense, but it's very slow. I think it's only for people who are actually interested, mm-hmm, in trying it out, not useful yet. But apparently they had to go through quite some hoops to actually getting it on the roads.
Oh, sure.
That the local government has actually agreed, yeah, with it, and yeah.
Yes.
So yeah, I mean, that's the beginning.
It's coming.
So
a couple more years and it'll be pretty normal.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure. I mean, I actually can't wait for the day I just get picked up by some autonomous car here and then go to wherever. I think it will be great.
A random destination.
Yeah, actually, that's nice. I mean, it's just like a random article on Wikipedia. So just drive me somewhere. I don't care.
Yes. I like the idea of, you know, I love public transportation, but something is very appealing about the idea that you could hail a car from anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like you're in the middle of a park or, I don't know,
yeah,
in the lake. What, yeah, happens if you do that? You call an autonomous car and you're in like a boat. And does it go to the shore and like wait for you? And then you ride your boat around the edge?
We wondered, right? In Stockholm, I believe. We, yeah, wondered what would happen. We were on the boat ride.
And we wanted to get an Uber.
while we were on the boat ride.
Ah, yes.
Wondering what would happen.
Or what if you attached your mobile phone to a drone? And you flew it all around the city.
That's some elaborate trolling right there.
Yeah, that would be incredible. Just to see like what happened if Uber completely broke, yeah, down because you're like, you know, traveling between blocks where there's no roads and stuff. And sign up as a driver and see what happens.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, but I'm not going to see you anytime soon, so I can't.
I think I don't know. I'd like to try it. Maybe it's, yeah, not that exciting once you're on. It's probably like really not slow, and it's like,
yeah.
I mean, guess it's cool.
It may feel a bit like the metro in Lausanne.
Probably.
Do you know? Did you ever drive that one?
Yeah, Lausanne.
Yes.
Yeah, I did.
So the one going uphill, basically the only underground.
Underground.
Yeah, we have
a subway. An actual subway.
Yes.
But it's not an actual subway.
Well, it's not. Well, yeah, kind of. I mean, it goes, yeah, from the lake up to the train station, basically.
And below some houses.
Somewhere, yeah, okay, it goes below.
Okay. Yeah.
So they call it a metro.
Yeah.
But the thing, yes, about
I think
it
I've
is
been on this before.
Yeah, it's only a few years old. Like they completely rebuilt it.
It's quite new.
And it's also driving autonomously.
That's right. And it's what you have to take if you're going to EPFL from the train station, yeah, right?
Yeah, that's right. I think
And you have to change like 6 times and you always get lost. Yeah. That was my recall. But, you know, it's interesting. In New York City, the L train, which goes between Brooklyn and Manhattan, has been autonomous for quite a while.
Oh, really?
I think it's been like 7 or 8 years now. Cool. They've been running it pretty much autonomous. But they have cameras and people who can take over.
Hmm. They do.
Apparently so. Hmm. I don't know if they still do that, but they did for a long time.
Okay. Might have even taken that one when I was in New York.
Probably did.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, but that makes total sense, right? Actually controlling those things remotely.
I know.
You can sit in a nice office with a nice view.
That's why I'm thinking we're over-engineering the shit out of all of this stuff. Like, come on. The world is full of people who don't have jobs, who are sitting at home with mobile phones or internet connections, who could be perfectly driving your $100,000 car down the road, making decisions for you, and yet you're trusting beta software instead.
Yeah.
What's the matter with us?
Which actually brings me to that story. There's been a 10-year-old guy, little kid, driving with his grandma. And actually, she had some kind of heart attack. I don't know. She went unconscious.
I know that one.
And that little fella actually realized what was happening and actually took over. I think she was on some kind of, I don't know if it was a highway, but apparently there was oncoming traffic. And that little kid just took over, went basically took the steering wheel and drove it on the side. Wow. And they asked him afterwards how he did that, right? It's like, it's not normal, right? I was like... He cited that he was basically learning it from Mario Kart.
Ah, naturally. Of course.
That's really cool. So I had this image now in mind that some 10-year-old kid drives the Metro. Or rides the Metro. It's like, yeah, it's easy for him. He knows Mario Kart, right?
So then, like, did he pop a parachute at the end of the...
Probably. Threw out the banana. It's like, that'll teach him.
Little throwing turtles out of the front.
Driving into the stars, right? Never know what you get.
Oh, man.
But I just love that story.
That is great.
I mean...
That is really great.
I mean, probably it's not... That didn't really help him, but I love that was the connection he made. It's like, yeah, yes. I'm used to this.
Oh, come Mario on, it's Kart. Easy. It's just like Mario Kart.
Sure.
I mean, but he could have died. I mean, if he didn't react to this, it's a crazy story.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I love it.
Yeah. I mean, on the internet, no one knows you're a dog, right? So anyone could be driving your car if such a system existed.
That's true. Basically. That's true.
We would have to trust whoever is doing it.
Yeah, but this problem we've solved. Like, you can rank and sort and filter people based on their abilities.
Yeah,
and,
true. You know, true. Yeah. I mean, the question is, would you know who exactly is driving your car?
No, it would be completely anonymous.
Okay, yeah.
And it could even change from moment to moment.
Yeah.
Consider this. I love this idea. I want to explore it further until everyone leaves your podcast. But imagine for a moment that there's some guy, and he's in a I don't know, let's say Belgium or something, and he's sitting on his computer with this high-speed internet, and he's watching a video feed, and his job is to remotely drive people's cars, but he only drives them down the same stretch of highway over and over again, or the same set of intersections because he knows them so well. He's become an expert at this part of the neighborhood, and he just navigates the same 20 intersections for 1,000 different drivers a day, but he knows it so well, he just does them again and again and again until eventually he starts to see himself in the rearview mirror.
Fantastic.
But I mean, you could basically breed experts.
Yeah, true.
Who, you know, this guy drives this area of the world better than anyone else in the world because he's done it 100,000 times. And you say you have
but
to
imagine
do something.
How incredibly boring that would be.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. But you know, there are certain people I've met who would thrive on these jobs.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, how often have you played a video game over and over and over and over and over again? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Super Mario Brothers, for example, or
true. It's just like a game, yeah.
So it's probably not a good business model, but I'm utterly fascinated with this idea, like using humans to do rudimentary AI, and it could be, if it was incredibly boring, you can gamify it. You know, like he's picking up, like he's competing with his friends who are driving on the same intersection and like trying to do it more perfect, or he's picking up little stars and pills and things along the way and getting a high score. It's just, there's something here, I'm convinced.
If you stop for a child, you get extra points.
That's right.
Yeah.
You get like an award.
Yeah.
Yes. And your name is written in the driver's view. Child saved. You know?
ten children saved. Yes,
exactly.
You high score.
You get a dollar, like an actual cash bonus for not hitting the child. And if you're about to hit the child, it immediately switches to another driver.
So he then hits the child. Yeah.
You have a button to actually switch over to someone else.
Yes. You just keep switching between them. Hey, like Thomas, radio station. Yes. Exactly. And then, like, you could avoid all these social situations where you have somebody tailgating another person and they're getting mad, so you, like, hit the button and they switch.
Yeah.
And it's like now you're suddenly, you know, in the other scene. But it's completely possible, I think, you know, for truckers. Think about truck drivers. They have exactly that job, to drive down a boring road for endless amounts of time. Yeah. The only difference between them and a remotely controlled driver is that they have to like actually physically go somewhere.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same job. Yeah. And they could take breaks.
Yeah, of course.
They could take breaks, or they could, like, you know, get up at night and work a little bit and then get bored and, you know, watch Starsky and Hutch and then, you know, go back to work again for 5 minutes and stop. And it's a completely viable thing.
Yeah, true. So, I mean, that's all provided that the infrastructure works.
Yes.
Know? Like there needs to be absolutely perfect internet connection all the time.
Right.
Otherwise, you have a problem.
Well, then the AI takes over.
Yes, of course. Yeah. Yeah. You can still have the AI as a backup. Yeah,
I mean, AI makes perfect sense on the highways where you can have things marked and stuff. But in the cities, I just don't see, you know, things happen and you have to react as a human. Like somebody on a bicycle, a drunk person stepping in front of your car, you know, dogs, cats, frisbees.
Yeah.
It's true. You never know what's going to happen.
Yeah. I don't know. I just have this idea that AI just will be better so fast, that it just overtakes any human. I don't know.
Yeah. Do you know this?
Probably right.
Do you know this blog? WaitButWhy.com?
No.
Oh, you should read it. There's a piece on artificial intelligence, which is really 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 well written, and also, I mean, it makes things really understandable, also for everyone, pretty much. Like you don't have to know anything and can just read it, and it's really really entertaining as well. Hmm. So yeah, it's a great blog. They also have, coincidentally, they have a few blog posts on Elon Musk and his companies, of course. but yeah, it's a great blog.
I mean, the guy actually had spent quite some time with Elon Musk, interviewed him.
Oh wow!
And then
he was actually invited by Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Wrote
this huge blog post. I mean, one blog post to read about for 3 or 4 hours. It's just crazy long.
Wow.
Explanation on what Tesla does and what SpaceX does
and why they do it as well.
Yeah.
Like it's not just they do it to, you know, earn money, but they also do it because, you know, it could serve the betterment of the human race, whatever.
Yeah, that's a pretty lofty goal when compared to PayPal.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I think we also have to introduce you a bit better. I mean,
it's optional.
It's optional.
I could be the anonymous guest.
You could be.
It's just never explained. It's like,
who is that guy?
Who is that guy? It's that guy. It's the American guy, but we don't know who it is.
You're the token American now.
Oh, I like to be token.
Just like, the American guy, mysterious.
Yes, exactly.
But how did you end up in Switzerland? I think that's...
It was a random series of events, to be honest. So I was trying to take a flight to San Francisco, and I actually got on the wrong plane. And
Does that happen?
And I came here, and like it was really weird. And I just like I stepped out, and I'm like, this is definitely not San Francisco. This looks like, you know, this looks like German. And it turns out it was Zurich. And so I didn't know what to do, so I just kind of like wandered down to get my bags. But of course, my bags weren't there, because they were in San Francisco. I mean, I'd taken the wrong plane. And I wandered downstairs, and I managed to find a taxi, and I didn't know what to do. And so I just decided, well, since I'm stuck here and the next plane won't come until the next day, I'm just going to like explore the city a little bit. And I started looking around, and somehow I ended up like in this truck. Like I this truck drove by, and I kind of like climbed into the back. And it was driving along, and all of a sudden, these guys were inside, and they had like these kind of ski mask looking things, but they weren't like terrorists.
Mafia guys?
No, they worked for UBS. They were like software
close
guys.
Enough.
Yeah, I think they were in the user testing, like manual testing group. And they were like, oh, you've seen too much. We're going to have to arrest you. And I was like, wait, I'm a programmer. I can help. And they were like, oh, really? Okay. Do you know COBOL? And I said, no, I don't, but I know Ruby. So they put me in this back room. And for like 2.5 years, I sat in this room by myself. And I was just like coding, I don't know, if-then statements and go-tos and stuff like that. And eventually I decided, you know, I kind of like this. It was a bit like Stockholm syndrome, and I had forgotten my family, and I had like a psychological trauma where you just like forget your own identity, kind of like Jason Bourne, but without the violence. Oh, yeah. And so I suddenly started to learn how to live in this place, Switzerland. And I realized where I was. It wasn't San Francisco. And then I eventually decided to have a child and you know, like
as you do,
get a proper Ausländer Ausweis and learn a little bit of German and try to integrate myself with society. And I picked Co-op over Migro, and I picked, you know, Manor over Globus, and I signed up for mobility, and I bought a bicycle, and I learned how to ride that, and I got a postal address, and then I liked addresses, so I got a job at the phone book. After some time had passed, I decided I was no longer American, so I pretended to be Swiss, and my accent gave me away, so I pretended to be a mute Swiss person. And so I just wouldn't talk to anybody, and I grew a beard. And the beard was actually great, and my last name is Seitz, and this turns out to be a very Swiss name, and it's written on the sides of buses in Lucerne, and there's a language or a business school called Seitz, so I pretended to be connected somehow with this school. And this kind of fake credential actually allowed me to exist in society. So I've been here for 10 years. And it's an incredible story, but here I am.
Wow.
Wow. What do you say? What can I say?
But there it is. Yeah, so yeah, I'm never going back.
You never told that story.
This is the first time.
Yeah.
Right here. Yes, it's true.
So you're somehow connected with these people from Seitz Valve, Seitz.ch, Seitz Valve.
I suppose so. Yeah, that looks like that.
Eugen Seitz AG.
It's either them or the other ones.
Have you ever thought about buying a red bus and doing sightseeing?
Ah, wow. Yeah, it's nice. No, I decided instead to do websites because it just pays better.
We figured that out as well.
Why isn't that your online handle, websites?
Because it's so damn corny.
Super
I couldn't
corny.
Live with it. I couldn't live with it. You know, okay, so I actually started working on code and internet and stuff like, I don't know, 30 years ago. And I was around when the internet was like UUCP and, you know, Gopher. Mm-hmm. Do you remember Gopher?
We don't remember it, but I know what it is.
No, you don't remember it. That was before your cells were actually structured.
That's true.
You were just scattered to the universe. But no, I've been doing internet-related things for a really long time, and I've heard the sites joke a few times.
Oh, really?
A couple of times. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, if you
didn't realize.
So I decided not to play off of that so much.
Can't pass on any puns.
No,
sorry, I have
convenient. You know, it actually, most of the people I knew in America mispronounced it and called it seats.
Yeah, of course they would. Yeah.
Yes. So I was constantly correcting them my whole time.
So where's the name actually coming from?
It's actually a German name.
Oh, okay.
My family immigrated to the U.S. from southern Germany.
Ah. How long
more ago? Than 100 years ago.
Okay.
I'm like fourth generation. So.
Ah.
And, yeah.
Did you do any research on that? I mean, do you know what they did or what?
No, a little bit. I actually met some distant relatives, but it's very fuzzy and people didn't keep up and... You know, like most Americans, families get divorced and spread to different parts of the country, and history is lost in floods and tornadoes. And you know, I just have a very kind of photocopied Facebook post history of my genealogy, which it's weird. Unlike people here who know their ancestry back to. You know, when people were mercenaries in the Canton of Schwyz, you know, fighting some tribe.
Yeah.
They're like, we're brothers.
I don't know my ancestry that well. Do you?
Actually, my father used to have that book, ancestry book. I mean, it's very common in Liechtenstein actually to have that.
Okay.
I mean, the whole village is in there basically.
Yeah.
And you know, and I think it's not complete, but it actually goes back to, I think even, 1700, 1800, yes.
I have no clue.
But, I mean, I wouldn't know. I just know my great-great-great grandfather used to be the mayor of the village, apparently. So. Okay.
Interesting.
I don't know. I actually don't know them. I don't even know what they did. I mean, probably were farmers like everyone else.
But it's
the idea. I don't know. I like the idea of actually meeting those people. It would probably be pretty weird.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you have nothing in common.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, my family was farmers and knife sharpeners and music publishing back before there were records. And, yeah.
Okay.
Some crazy, weird history mixed in.
Cool.
So, and journalists, a lot of journalists in my family. So, it's a diverse bunch, but mostly artists and musicians who tend to not keep a record of their family history and move a lot and have not enough money to buy a typewriter. So, you know, a lot of it's just word of mouth and a lot of exaggeration.
Yeah.
So... Yeah. But yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
Cool.
My life in a bucket.
Wow.
In a nutshell.
I think
so. Enough about me.
Enough about you. We could talk. We talk a lot. But maybe we take a little break.
All right. Sure.
Musical break.
Musical break.
Yeah.
Do you take requests from callers?
Go ahead.
Hi. is this the radio show? Am I on?
Oh, sorry. Okay, sorry.
Wait, let's start over. Okay. Let's start over.
So we have Jeremy on the line. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi. Am I on?
Yeah, you're on, of course.
Oh,
live.
I just want to say I love your guys' show. It's really great. I listen to it all the time. And
thanks.
I want to say a shout out to my friend Gerald. Hey, it's me. What's up? Happy birthday, man. Can you play Happy Birthday? Like, you know, the song, one of the versions?
No, I'm sorry,
Can
Jeremy.
Can you play
you know.
Unhappy Birthday by Morrissey?
No, Jeremy.
Could you play When I'm 64 by Paul McCartney? Or maybe...
You know the rules. We only play death metal here. I mean, it's a death metal show.
Okay, I'll take death metal.
So, what do you want to play?
Do you have any?
What kind of
I don't know.
Metal?
I don't know. I'm actually, I actually don't know.
Do you know any death metal bands?
Not particularly, no. I tend to listen to other kinds of music.
Okay.
But you could pick something at random and see what happens.
Just random death metal.
Why not? Completely random. Just.
I mean, I mean, after
life
this show,
is full of surprises. You don't know what will happen.
So,
or it could be Henry Mancini. You just don't know.
Okay. Let's see what comes up.
It's just entering death metal into YouTube and see what comes up.
Okay.
Don't put it on too loud. It's different than I remember. Oh, shit. There it goes. Okay, that's enough.
I think
I find it really incredible that you just randomly picked my favorite song. It's awesome.
Yeah, we know what our listeners love.
Bloodspot are a great band. Yeah.
I actually don't know them.
No, I don't know either. I've
very
never
expressive.
Heard of them. But yeah, I mean that's not a bad piece of death metal, actually.
No,
no,
it had some energy.
Yeah.
Going there.
I like it.
Good. The first time we played anything like that.
Really? Yes. I don't know. I mean, I thought maybe that was kind of like your thing.
No, not at all.
Death metal time. Let's go.
Exactly. Like, no.
Our listeners are expecting it.
Yeah. No.
No, there's actually at least one poor guy who actually listened to us to get to sleep, basically. And that guy just woke up really angry.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, what?
Sorry about that.
It's like, what the fuck, guys?
Yeah.
I mean, you have a very, very soothing voice. Like,
everybody.
And the guy just slept, and then it's like,
yeah,
poor guy.
You can go back to sleep now. It's okay.
It's okay.
We're not going to do it again. I promise. Don't do it. Oh no.
No, I think I think we have enough. Right. Good, good.
It's good.
So where do we go from here?
There's so many places.
We've just
been kind of a stream of consciousness evening, actually.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know. It's weird. Whenever we get together and talk, it kind of turns into this random collection of thoughts and U-turns.
Yeah, it does.
It's nice. I like it, though. I mean, yeah. Did you know, Jeremy, that we have an HTC Vive at our office now?
Do you really?
Yes, we do.
And are you? What is your impression?
I like it a lot.
Yes,
I'm pretty pretty impressed with it. Yeah, have you tried it?
I've done some demos. Yes.
Okay.
I went to a experimental day that was run by there's a VR company, a full-time VR company in Zurich.
Yeah.
And they ran a day at my work where we tried out like Oculus Rift and the Vive and many different other devices. And another friend of mine who's a brilliant graphics programmer bought an early Oculus Rift dev kit.
Yeah.
And I did some demos with that. And I have to say, I think there's something there. I think it is going to be significant, but I haven't had the joy of trying out like a really good immersive game. Like everything that I tried out felt a bit hokey or a bit demo-y, you know, kind of like the early days of 3D graphics cards where everything was like shiny balls and that kind of stuff.
Yes. Everything looked like plastic.
Yes. But I've heard that now the games that are shipping are quite complete and quite immersive and quite great. And I've seen, I've read stuff about it. What was your impression? What did you think?
Well, so far we've only really played the demo stuff. That sort of you can get on Steam for free.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from the what was it called, the thing from Google?
Tilt brush.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you play with the controllers? Right.
Mm-hmm. You can draw in 3D basically. That's right. What you can do with it basically. Yeah. And you have different kind of tools.
I didn't try that, but it sounds very cool.
But it's really, that one was also quite impressive. I mean, you can really get in and do a little bit of detail on this kind of thing and so on. It's quite impressive how accurate the tracking is of these things now. Also, you don't really get sick or anything with the headset on. It's really like it tracks tracks the motion so well that the graphics are really.
But did you do any
quite good
demos where you were moving, or were they ones where you were standing still and trying to control?
Most of them, you kind of stand still. Yeah, I mean, you're moving a bit in the room, of course. Like you have this, like, I don't know, 2 by 3 meters or something you can move around in. But really you have the problem you have if you have movement inside that game that you don't directly control, like the way you move around in physical space. So if you have on your controller, you can basically push a button and then you move forward in the game, but not in real life.
Right.
That really has the potential to feel very weird and confusing.
Like an out-of-body experience.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's one demo we have where you really get that feeling, which is very weird.
I'll tell you the one that messed me up.
Yeah.
I did a demo where I was sitting on a amusement park ride.
Oh.
And you know these pirate ship rides
that just
go back and forth? Yeah. Imagine one of these scaled up to like 10 times the normal size.
Wow.
Where you're accelerating at hundreds of kilometers an hour and you're going up like you know, 500 meters in the air. And my hands were sweating so profusely that I thought I was actually like a human water fountain. And I became very ill. And
I can imagine.
I tried to take the headset off, and I actually took it off the wrong way and kind of broke one of the cables on thing because I was panicking, and the guy running the demo was a bit pissed off with me. That freaked me out because I'm not normally the kind of person to get sick, and I did some other VR things that didn't bother me, but that particular one with this swinging motion without actually feeling my body moving made me so ill. And other people who tried it also got sick, but I violently reacted to it in a way that...
What was that with the Vive, or was that with...
I think it was the Vive, yes. I think it was the Vive. Okay. And it was something custom. It could be that the dude who worked at this VR company actually coded it himself. So if he did that, like, kudos, you know. Some amazing piece of torture that he devised, but... but it, yeah, that really taught me the power of this.
You really have to be careful with that kind of stuff because that really can put people off massively. And I can only imagine. I mean, the Vive is the only VR thing I tried so far. I didn't even try the Oculus Rift or anything else.
I tried the Rift with Minecraft.
Yeah,
and I didn't want to stop.
Oh, okay,
I've been playing Minecraft for years, and I love the game. But with this experience of complete 3D where you feel like you're actually mining and you're using your hands to do it and stuff, it is so immersive and addictive and fun. And it's really cool. It's really cool.
I'll have to see whether there is an adaption for the Vive for Minecraft. That would be great, actually. Yeah. I'd like that a lot. Try that out. So this is sort of part of our gadget budget, which we have in the company now. This is the first thing we bought on that budget, and like everyone can try it out. And I mean, we can also invite customers and show them the thing and so on. Mm-hmm. So it's great. But our CEO is actually also interested in trying to, or at least experimenting with developing something for it.
Yes.
So we'll see how it goes.
There are a couple of applications that I find fascinating. I mean, games are the obvious one, and those I think are going to be awesome. Yeah. But I think there's something in this idea of having a user interface, maybe even a generic one, maybe even an operating system that we haven't yet realized. But just imagine where you put this thing on and you boot up your desktop.
Yeah.
And you're able to use the applications you know and love today, but in a virtual space. Mm-hmm. And then you're able to also organize documents and have screen shares and maybe pick what view you want to have out the window. And maybe you want dancing bears and floating turtles in the room while you're working. And you're experiencing, you know, a rain shower. And like, I don't know, that's a bit out of control, but even if it was a normal office environment, for instance, collaboration, I'm sitting at my desk, I see through my high-resolution display what appears to be a monitor and a keyboard, but it's not actually there. Mm-hmm. And then next to me is my friend who's 500 kilometers away, and on the other side of him is, I don't know, some graphic designer who's working on my project. And somehow, like through the use of cameras and... perhaps 3D cameras or something, you actually create this virtual space.
Yeah.
And I think this is absolutely, utterly compelling. And it could be that we just, like, the first thing that will happen is all of the IKEAs in the world will close because nobody will actually need any furniture anymore. And they'll just sit in empty rooms with headsets on and they'll have, like, the most awesome view and things in the world. And gold and fur coats and like everything they could ever imagine because they just put on the headset all the time. Yeah. And people will develop this like rings around their head where, you know, over the generations, it will be like, you know, people just kind of end up with these flat foreheads because through natural selection, the more flat your head is, the more suited you are for comfortable VR use and you'll just get ahead in society. So to speak. But the other thing I think that will be compelling is this idea of travel.
Yeah.
And I think if I were going to drop everything and start a startup today, my idea would be that you strap 360 cameras onto travelers, and everybody in their life knows somebody who's the kind of crazy person who's like, oh, dude, I'm going to go to Tibet tomorrow.
Yeah.
Or oh, next week I'm going to go to, like, you know, Moscow, and then after that I'm going to Ottawa. And these people, you basically, they don't care about money anyway because they travel all the time. So you get these people and you buy them 360 cameras and high-speed internet, and you have them go to these cool places. And they're wearing this crazy headset contraption, but they don't care anyway because they travel all the time and they're used to being looked at weird. And they go to these cities and they have a headset on and they're listening. And it's like Twitch.
Uh-huh.
So yeah. There's thousands of people watching them who have Oculus Rifts and Vives on. And they're seeing in full 360-degree view what they're doing. But you pay to be part of his trip. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And imagine this guy, like, so just imagine for a second, he's in London, he's walking around on the street, it's a beautiful sunny day, and you're like, hey, and he's like, what, Jeremy? And you're like, hey, can you go into that store? And he's mm-hmm. like, yeah, sure, yeah. And he goes into the store, and you're like, hey, can you go into the back? He's like, yeah, sure. And he's like, that Starship Enterprise model, can you buy that? And he's like, yeah, sure. So he picks it up and he walks to the front counter, and then he gets to the payment thing and he pulls out his phone and you pay because you're connected on the app, and he buys that thing. And then he like takes it back with him in his luggage, or he mails it. Yeah. Maybe he just drops it off at an office in London where he goes at the end of every night when he wants to get away from his job. And basically he's walking around and people are just kind of telling him what to do, and you know, he's experiencing things for you, and this and if they're interesting people to watch, imagine Twitch, but imagine they're not in their stupid living room playing Call of Duty, but they're out in the world interacting with people, playing pranks, seeing movies, going dancing with hot looking people. You know, like experiencing life to the fullest, so you don't have to. and they're able to buy and obtain things.
Shit. Yeah, that's
this is. That I mean, this is fantastic, right? It's like Avatar.
Yeah,
it's basically Avatar, and I think this is the future of VR. I really do. I don't think it's 3D graphics. I think it's reality.
Yeah, it just needs to be not a thing you put on your head. Like that, I mean,
small and unobtrusive, and
I think I don't mind. It's cool, right? At the moment, because I mean, you're anyway amazed at what you can do, and your head is tracked and so on.
Yeah,
that's really cool. So you don't mind having that thing, but I think they will get smaller and smaller, and at some point, it will be something you can put on comfortably, hopefully.
Yeah. I also think it's obvious, and it will be in the next generation, that these devices become slimmer, but then they also have dual high-resolution cameras in front.
Yeah.
So that you can wear them outside and you can actually see your surroundings and have this augmented. And I know HoloLens supposedly works, but HoloLens looks like some crappy ski goggles.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the full VR experience with you want to be able to like just tap a button and you see the room.
Yeah.
You don't want to have to like take the thing off and recalibrate and everything. Like, you should just be able to see. And the other thing is I think there will be an aftermarket for devices that are very simple. You could probably make one now, and you have a motion sensor and a little wristband that vibrates like hell. And it's calibrated so that you wear it in a way that it is not triggered by your own movements. Like, basically it's like an alarm system, because when you have this VR headset on, what are you going to do when a random person enters the room? You know, what if you're like really into a game or something and somebody comes in and they take your wallet and they start a fire.
Yeah.
You know, or your mom comes in and she's like choking to death, and you never know because you're like, you know, shooting at aliens. Or like, you know, there's a water leak and the room is filling up with water, and like I would be so paranoid to have this headset on all the time. I'd want to know that something was happening, that there was somebody there besides me. And to me it's like, you know, scary to have this headset on. I feel completely I played a prank. A friend of mine at work was wearing the HTC Vibe and he had it on and he was really into something, and I just walked up to him and grabbed him. Like, completely grabbed him. And he freaked out so bad. He crapped his pants.
That's terrible.
Like, it's terrifying. Yeah. You're helpless. Terrifying. You're completely helpless with this thing on. Yeah. Your ears and your eyes are covered, and you're moving like an idiot. And somebody can come up to you.
Waving just around these controllers also.
Exactly.
Like, extremely dumb.
Yes.
But I saw a video of Jacksepticeye, which we talked about as well earlier. And apparently there is now a demo out for a new Star Wars game for the HTC Vive, or for VR stuff. Okay. And there's a demo out. And apparently you can do, you know, laser sword fights with the Vive.
Perfect.
It's that for that kind of game. It's perfect. Yeah. I can really imagine it being amazing.
Wow. Yeah.
Think of that. Like, it's crazy. Like, that's games like these will be one of the first, you know, killer applications that will really, really promote this well, I think. But yeah, we should totally install it in the office, actually. Yeah. Let's install it tomorrow.
Okay.
Good. And try it out.
I also think things like maps. I was just imagining like Google Earth with the full 3D experience where you could really explore 3D terrain in that way. It would be really nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's.
Here's the crazy thing. I'm going to rewind to 1993. Where I had the chance to play, okay, let me correct that, 1994 or 5, because somebody might actually know what I'm talking about, Silicon Graphics Iris workstation with LCD shutter glasses.
Okay.
And you had a giant screen, like a 30-inch monitor, and a full 3D experience moving around molecules, exploring terrain maps, and granted, this is really old technology, but to me, that was like a mind-blowing moment. To actually see a computer operating in full 3D and I could interact with it in real time.
So you had glasses on?
You had shutter glasses. Yeah,
so it's the same sort of technology you have in cinema these days.
Exactly, you were in control.
Yeah.
You know, and it was really quite mind-blowing. But the thing was they couldn't figure out the interface and they didn't have the processing power to make it realistic.
Yeah.
It was way ahead of its time. But I know some molecular biologists and chemists who actually used it effectively.
Nice.
So
there's also in the HTC Vive demo thing from Valve itself. Like there's one part where you can look at a skeleton of a human. Like and really it's as tall as you are. So it's really it stands in front of you in the room as tall as you are in immersive 3D. And you can really go in and look at each bone and everything. So that awesome. Kind of stuff is also, I can imagine, becoming really, really a real tool that people will actually use.
Yes.
For you know, I don't know, diagnosing whatever.
And you could, like, chase Pokemons without actually having to leave your living room.
Absolutely. How great would that be?
It's like the future. It's amazing. I can't wait.
Oh man.
Yeah, that's great.
Great new world. What a time we're living in. What a time.
What a fun.
Yep. May you live in interesting times.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, I'm wondering can you buy these things readily now? Because when I went to Digitech recently to try to find something because I thought about, you know, impulse buying something and everything was, you know, minus 4,000 in stock. You know, like Switzerland is like the last place to get any of these things
the Vive we ordered directly from HTC on htcvive.com, I believe, and it was there like in 3 days or so.
It really is. Oh wow, that's impressive. Okay.
It was like it was €1,000. So, yeah.
So skip the normal channels.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would.
Okay.
Also, you get, if you buy the Vive, for instance, you get something for free, I believe, some stuff on Steam. You get also
very nice.
Along with it.
Very nice.
Which is nice.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And yeah, but yeah, we had more problem actually getting the PC ready for it because we
okay, because you need a high end PC.
Yeah, kind of like it's not. I mean, it can be, you know, 1 or 2 year old the graphics card. I think that will work, but I mean.
Do they make one that uses like Thunderbolt?
I don't think so.
No.
No.
I think you really
not
need Windows.
Not going to happen. And that's also the problem. I mean, yeah. And you kind of want to go Windows. Like you don't want to, you could go Xbox, right? But
probably.
But then you're limited to kind of first person shooter games mostly and not.
I don't know. I'm not a console gamer at all.
I'm not either. I reject them completely. Yeah. I don't want them in my home. Yes. They're killing Americans by the thousands. It's true.
Oh yeah.
It's like a national health problem, consoles.
Shit. Yeah. I don't know.
So what do you think about Beethoven?
Beethoven. I don't know. I don't have much affinity for Beethoven.
Really?
Can't say.
Me neither. Why do you say? Or
just segue. Random segue.
Okay. Do you like it?
Yes, I do. I think Beethoven's awesome.
I actually don't really listen to classic music.
No.
But not because I don't like it, but I don't know.
I mean, I don't listen to it regularly, but as a programmer, something about his music I found was particularly awesome.
Do you listen to program? I mean, while programming?
Sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is it different?
Yes.
Okay.
I maintain a Spotify playlist of programming music, which must not contain lyrics.
Yeah.
Cool.
Or people's voices. It must be structured music.
Yeah.
It cannot be like chaotic music. There can't be any saxophone or guitar solos.
Yeah.
It has to be structured.
Yeah.
And not so repetitive that I'm like, God damn it, change the channel. Like, it has to actually be interesting. And I've curated this list over some time.
Yeah.
And Beethoven's on there. And and some interesting atmospheric music and some Steve Reich and some other things. But it's all over the place. But anyway, I brought it up. I don't know why. Because you had a musical shirt on.
Yeah.
And I was actually thinking about the movie Beethoven, which is about a dog.
I know that.
Yeah, but is it old? No.
Yes. The dog?
No, I mean the movie. Is it an old dog?
Yes.
Does it smell? Is it wet?
It's a smelly old dog. No, I don't know. I'm freestyling. Sorry. I also like...
From the 90s, right?
I studied as a jazz musician, so sometimes I just, I don't know,
1992.
Randomly switch lanes in traffic.
Yeah.
92, really?
92, yeah.
So you can guess my age now.
when you mentioned Beethoven, I actually thought of Bach.
Bach, oh, okay. I like Bach too.
Do you know the book Gödel, Escher, Bach?
Yes, I know the book, yeah.
The GEB?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a favorite of many... Hackers.
Yes, exactly.
For very good reasons. Yes.
Have you,
what's the book?
Do you know it?
No.
Yeah, it's about...
I mean, I know the title, but
yeah,
I
it's
never...
about these... Basically, these... It's kind of about these three people.
Okay.
Gödel, Escher, and Bach. Like, Gödel is a mathematician that did a lot of work in Mengen theory.
Exactly.
I don't know what that is in English. Whatever. Escher is the artist that did these drawings of, you know, stairs are going upside down and all that kind of crazy shit.
Yes.
And Bach is the composer.
Yeah.
And it sort of explores what all these have in common and sort of how the concepts of their traits are sort of related to each other. Like for instance, the concept of recursion is something that comes up really often in there, and you see they explain how, you know, recursion plays a part in Gödel's mathematical theory and so on, and in Escher's paintings, and also in Bach's music, because Bach apparently wrote some music that was in a way recursive.
Yeah.
and yeah, mm-hmm. stuff like that. So it's really interesting. It's an interesting read.
I would Patterns say. And yes. and order and chaos and how things fit yeah. together and all of this. Yeah. You start to think that everything is algorithmically generated, yeah. you know, that the entire world. Have you ever had one of those moments where you're like looking at a small plant and you're realizing how that repeats, you know, the yeah. one leaf becomes yeah. the next leaf mm-hmm. and the branches spawn more leaves and so forth. And then all of a sudden you're thinking about, you know, that database you created where it was like, you know, linked to itself and,
yeah.
And yeah. how it's not that different from what you're looking at right now that's actually alive and how it is actually made up of cells that reproduce and do exactly the same thing. And it's like all the way down.
Yeah.
It just goes all the way down. It is. It's really freaky. It's really freaky. And there's yeah. this book that was published probably, I want to say 15 years ago by Stephen Wolfram called A New Kind of Science. Uh-huh. If you've never seen this book, you have to look at it. I won't pretend to understand it. I would like to say I'm a smart person. This book weighs as much as like a bowling ball. You pick this book up in hardcover. You have to get it in hardcover because it's impressive. It's called A New Kind of Science. And maybe you can get the Amazon version where you can peek inside. Because if you, yeah. you peek inside, and if you're listening to this, you have to look at this book. Because it is unlike anything you've ever seen in your entire life. You're expecting to see mathematical formulas. You're wrong.
Yeah.
What you will see instead are patterns, pixels, repeating streams of data visualized. And what this guy essentially did is he figured out a complete new order of mathematics, which is based on like patterns, visual patterns, repeating uh-huh. patterns, sequences, which can be visualized and realized that if you can put these patterns into some kind of a visual sequence and you zoom out from them, you're actually able to see, you're actually able to solve problems and see things. And it's just, it's absolutely mind blowing. And yeah. And what's also kind of cool about this is I only realized later that Stephen Wolfram worked for Richard Feynman, who was also one of the favorite hacker geniuses
yeah.
who contributed to the atomic bomb and also understood why the Challenger exploded and in between solved probably most of the important problems in physics we know about. And this dude like worked for him. And they're almost polar opposites in the sense that on the one hand, Richard Feynman was famous for solving problems on a single piece of paper with a pencil using simple mathematics, not even complex mathematics, like simple mathematics, and would boil problems down into things that could be explained to a child. And then you have Wolfram, who went in the other direction and basically is the closest we've ever come to achieving, you know, like machine intelligence and in completely new ways of looking at the universe through patterns and science and math. And, you know, anyway, it's a really cool book. Right. And I had a copy for about 10 years and I used to love to look at it to remind myself how small I am. That when I have a really hard problem I can't solve, like in a web app, or like I don't understand why this iOS app is crashing, and I'm like, I'm just not smart enough. I'd look at this book and I'd be like, no, I just want to die. No, but it's actually, it's a really cool book. It's very inspiring.
So it's by Stephen Wolfram, from Wolfram Alpha.
Absolutely. Basically. Same dude.
That guy.
Yeah. Same dude.
So yeah, that he must have a brain.
He has a brain, and it's a cool book. And I gave my copy to one of my good friends who has a very big brain and could actually understand it. Because you're not allowed to keep books to impress your friends. You actually have to read them and understand them. It took me a long time to accept that.
On a related note, do you own a copy of The Art of Computer Programming?
I think I did when I was in college.
Yeah? Did you read it?
No, I did not. I did not. And actually, I'm embarrassed to admit that I rejected a lot of classical common books because I had some bad experiences. See, I started coding. I was mostly self-taught. I read manuals and I learned through doing, and I talked to a lot of other programmers and studied their code. And that was how I learned how to code. And then when I went to college, and this was in the early 90s, computers, they were still talking about mainframes and waterfall. I mean, they were actually trying to teach us waterfall, like how to design programs. And even then I knew it was wrong. And somehow I rejected all of that. And I got into this whole mindset of like, you know, I'm the younger generation. I'm smarter than the rest of you. I can write programs in Pascal. You guys are using COBOL. You suck. And I rejected all of that and just quickly moved into building useless web applications with a lot of bugs and no tests. And then later on, a friend of mine who I respected quite a lot, who was an open source programmer and had worked at Mozilla, taught me how to not be an idiot. And he was like, this is like how you actually write a program for real, and these are tests, and this is how you don't embarrass yourself, and this is how people who actually have real jobs do it. And he gave me a couple of books that I didn't read. But the one that I did read was because I heard about fandom, you know, and I remember somebody talking about patterns. And I was like, oh, wow, patterns, that's cool. Like, I can use patterns, and then I can talk to my coder friends, and they'll think I'm smart. So I can talk about patterns. So I picked up a copy of Design Patterns and the Gang of Four book.
Yeah.
And I read it, and then I discovered that everyone was making fun of me because I was talking about, you know, design patterns and composition and inheritance and all this kind of stuff. And they were like, "You're, dude, don't do that." And then I eventually discovered Ruby, and everything was fine after that. So in answer to your question, I just have never been a hardcore enough programmer to really learn how to do it, quote unquote, properly. And I've had long discussions with people who have told me about the virtues of the structure and art of computer programming and how to analyze things. And I'm just not academic enough to get it. Mm. I'm a common sense street kid when it comes to code. That's just, yeah, it's just a different approach. Like, I'm more Feynman than Wolfram. That sounds cool. To bring it all together.
Nice.
Yeah, but yes, basically the same. Yeah, similar for me. I actually started reading the Gang of Four book, and it's just so boring. It's just, I don't know, super boring. But I read through a few others, and it's like, usually it's like nice to read, but oftentimes it's just, yeah, I don't know, the most common books or those that are most recommended are really not a nice read. And there's almost always another book that teaches you the same thing but in a better way.
Exactly. And this is the point. Think about this for a second. If you want to call yourself a really good programmer, I think you have to take all of the shortcuts and use all of the dirty tricks that no one else is using. And I feel sorry for the guy who sits and reads a hardcover academic book, 500 pages long, cover to cover.
Yeah.
And so he can talk about it with his friends, and maybe he's really into it and he enjoys it. Good for him. I will go to fucking Wikipedia.
Yeah.
And I will read about everything that I need to know about this book. And then I will download some samples from GitHub where people have implemented these concepts in a language I can understand.
Yeah.
I could read that book or basically learn 80% of the important details from that book in a day and a half.
Yeah.
Whereas this
then
guy
you copy
has
some code from Stack Overflow and everything's fine.
You go to Stack Overflow and everything's fine. I mean, but isn't the point that you understand the meaning of these books, that you understand what they're actually trying to show you and why that's important?
Yeah, sure.
And for some people, they like to dive into the details and read the proof and actually go through the full reasoning of the book. But for me, I'm with you. It's like I want to read a book where it's written about somebody who's like how to apply it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really care about all the whys of how they got there and the structure of the approach and the meta discussion around the problem. I just want to know, like, what is it that's so great about this, that this author has discovered, that helps me get through my problems?
And can I get that answer without reading this whole book?
Yeah.
If I can, then I'm going to try. And yeah. And you don't get the beauty of it. So like, for example, when I was in school and somebody would give me a book to read, like, I don't know, The Scarlet Letter or Catcher in the Rye. Mm-hmm. And these are pretty good books. If you put up with them and you read through them, they're actually quite amazing for the appreciation of the art. But if you actually want to understand why they were significant at the time they were written and what made them so powerful and how they affected people and what the ideas were and who the characters were,
yeah,
you can read a synopsis.
Yeah.
And walk away, and you can then have a conversation at a cocktail party, and that girl you met might actually think you're kind of smart. And you've cheated, and this is social engineering, and this is hacking. And I spend my whole life trying to social engineer my way through that and do as little work as possible, because that's the hacker way, isn't it?
Yeah, true. It is. True. It's so funny. There's actually a book that I still want to read it. It was actually recommended to me by my philosophy teacher. Can you say that? I don't know. Yeah. We have philosophy, so that's basically the dude who taught it. And it was basically, the idea was to basically go through all of history from, I don't know, ancient history to now. So basically just the most important things that happened, and basically a book that tells you everything that happened so far. And it's actually this thick, so it's just a normal book. Mm. And I started reading it, but didn't finish, but I still want to do that, because basically that everything you need to know is in there. Just very short, and just explanation that makes sense from start to finish.
Yes.
I don't remember the name of it, unfortunately, but yeah, it's supposed to be really good. And after that, you can basically talk with everyone about anything.
Yeah. Yes.
And seems like you know your shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's also, I think, with history, for instance, history is about connections between events, right?
Exactly.
And not about facts.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to say, you can, but I mean, you just sound like a smartass if you say, in 1875, actually, this happened. Ha ha. Yeah. You know, in France, they invented this and that. And the important thing to know is how that led to where we are, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. So to sort of see the connection of everything.
I mean, there is a pure pleasure in it. So like, you could understand everything you need to know about Star Wars without sitting through all 7 films.
Yeah.
Because you could go to Wikipedia and you could read about the characters. And if you can remember things pretty well with one reading, you could skip all of Star Wars. And then you could fake your way through a lot of geek parties and cultural events and understand Calvin and Hobbes comics and everything else without ever having seen the films. And does that make you an imposter? Does that make you a charlatan, a traitor, because you didn't watch the films? Or is it just that you just didn't get around to it? On the other hand, if you actually watch them, you can get some enjoyment out of it and appreciate the art of it.
Yeah.
And it just depends on where you want to spend your time. And for me, every academic book I read was another 27 hours that I couldn't be programming or reading Reddit.
Hmm.
So priorities, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I see your point.
I see your point too.
But I don't
similar.
I don't hate people who read these books. There are some people who really genuinely enjoy it. They get a thrill out of going through and thinking in the mindset of the person who wrote it, which I think is maybe the appeal.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a part of somebody else's brain, right? You're sort of consuming. So there's a sort of an appeal in that. And if there are people that you think are really, have to say something, are really amazing people, then.
Or maybe it's the same sense of awe you get when you go into like a famous giant building and you're thinking, wow, some architect designed this and like a bunch of people built this and this was way ahead of its time. Mm. Like nobody imagined you could ever do something so complicated and somehow here it is. And, you know, when you're reading, a really serious book like that, you know.
The Art of Computer Programming.
Yeah, The Art of Computer Programming. The Structure and Theory of Computer Programs, or anything from the ACM. But for me, that was just like, I just couldn't do it. I was like, stop. I got to do something else.
Yeah.
This hurts. It hurts.
Yeah.
So Beethoven.
Actually, I read an article that I actually saved a few weeks ago, yesterday. Because I thought I have to read this. It was so interesting. The title was "The Empty Brain," and it says your brain does not process information, retrieve knowledge, or store memories. In short, your brain is not a computer.
Wow!
And that's really interesting. And
so, what is it?
Yeah, that's. It starts actually out with. The author talks about what people thought of the mind works like throughout history, and people thought that it's like those fluids that make you do things, right? It's like very ancient.
Like
it's like
alcohol?
No, it's really just, I don't know how, there's just this philosophical theory that you have four different fluids in your body and the composition of them makes out your character and your traits.
Okay.
That's very ancient. But they believe that. And if you're very angry, you basically have more of that fluid in you.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Like alcohol.
Exactly. Exactly. So it sounds very wacky, but yeah, we had that actually in school, so I remember that. And then they thought that it's very tiny movements inside that basically do this, like, I don't know, like gears that work. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously stupid from if you think about it now. But since we have computers, so basically apparently since the 40s, people... think of the brain as some kind of computer, and you store information and you retrieve information, and there's some kind of, you process it and all that stuff. And this author says basically that this is really all flawed. Doesn't make any sense.
You know, this reminds me of that. There's these studies, right, that say basically memory is made up as you recall it.
Exactly. Like
in the moment that you recall memory, it's actually your brain fabricates it. So what that means is that for instance, if you have people who have witnessed something and you ask them after, they will sometimes be with complete confidence say, you know, the car was blue, because that's how their mind makes it up, but clearly wasn't the case.
Yes.
So
they can convince themselves that something happened that didn't happen. Yes. But I think this kind of makes sense because we don't have a perfect recall.
Yeah, of course.
Some people have certain recall for things better than others, but I always imagined the brain was... I never thought it was a computer because from a very young age when I started programming computers, it just seemed too... predictable, and the brain is far from predictable.
Exactly.
And I thought, well, you know, if I can read from this floppy disk 100 times and I get the same thing, it's definitely not happening in my brain.
Yeah.
And you can selectively erase things, you can selectively change things, you can forget things and remember them later, and they're triggered by other things. And I think the key to, I always thought that I envisioned the brain as being this thing that was like this network of stuff that was triggered. One thing triggered another, almost like balls bouncing in space, you know, that they run into each other. But or the idea of a field programmable array, FPGA, field programmable gate array, this something that's reconfigurable. So it's like this thing that can be changed. And you hear about people who get a brain injury and one part of their brain takes over and is able to do a function that the other couldn't before. And have you heard this idea that the left and right-hand side of the brain are actually independent? They're like two processes running in parallel.
Mm-hmm.
And you actually, normally they're bridged together, so they communicate and they kind of agree.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start to realize how you talk to yourself sometimes, and you second-guess yourself, and you get paranoid, and you have like self-image problems, and then you see yourself in a mirror, and you're like, how could I look like that? That's a weird expression. What am I saying to myself? Stop it. I'm talking to myself. Really shouldn't do that. You always do that. Stop it. You always do. Don't lie to me. Fuck, yeah. You keep lying to me. And then you realize it's completely true.
Yeah.
You have two brains. We all have two brains. Oh, and they're connected together.
That's fucking creepy.
And they're struggling. They're struggling with each other all the time. And people who are normally balanced, they've reached peace.
Yeah.
Like they've like Switzerland, have found a way to get the two halves to agree and live without war. And then there's other people who this breaks down and they do things like stealing toys from children or driving really fast on the highway or whatever. And they just, or self-destructing in some really weird way on a podcast, for example. Yeah.
There's this video from CPG Gray. I don't know if you know him. That's some kind of YouTube person, also has a podcast. And he actually talks about exactly that and really well. I have to find that video and put it in.
I remember reading this article, and when I first heard that, I think it actually kept me up all night.
Yeah.
I was so disturbed by it. But it totally makes sense, right?
It makes sense, and that video is really, it's really great.
I haven't seen this video, but I have to.
I have to just start playing it. We don't have to, I think we don't. We can't do the whole thing, but just the start of it, even. And it's really great, and explains it very well.
And who is it again?
CPG Gray.
GP Gray.
CGP Gray.
That's a horrible name. But yeah.
I have it now, I think.
Your brain is two brains, two hemispheres, each doing half the work of being you. Half your vision goes to each and half your movement directed by each. Right controls left and left controls right. Your two brains coordinate through a wire of nerves, but this wire can be cut and was, for a time, used as an epilepsy treatment. After the cut, people seemed the same, though their brain was split in twain. Except some post-split patients described that while selecting their morning outfit with right hand, left might come along to disagree. Actually, left hand might quite often disagree, which these split brain patients found frustrating. What's happening? To investigate, remember, right brain sees and controls one half, while left brain controls and sees the other. But only left brain can speak.
Hello.
Because that's where the speech center is located. Right brain, without this, is mute. In normal brains, this doesn't matter because each half communicates across the wire with the other. But split brains can't, and thus you can show just the right brain a word, ask the person, what did you see, and you'll hear
nothing.
Because left-speaking brain saw nothing. Meanwhile, right brain will use its hand to pick the object out of a pile hidden from left brain. This is deeply creepy. Ask, why are you holding the object, and speaking left brain will make up a plausible sounding but totally wrong reason.
I always wanted to learn how to solve one of these.
Left brain isn't lying, it's just doing what brains do, creating a story that explains its past actions to its current self. A behavior which does rather cast doubt onto the notion of free will, but that's a story for another time. Creating reasons for why it does things is just something left brains do. It happens in normal, healthy humans all the time, and if you think about it closely, you know you've done this. Back to experiments. Give right brain an object, ask the person what's in your hand, and they won't be able to say.
I'm not holding anything.
And when asked to draw, a split brain can draw two separate objects simultaneously with each hand.
That's
in a way
cool.
Unsplit brains find challenging. These experiments on split brain patients are deeply unsettling because they really point in the direction of a mute, separate intelligence something living in the skull. You can even ask questions of a split brain and get disagreement on the answer. So if your brain is split, who is the you in this situation? From the outside, it's tempting to think of the part of the brain that's speaking as the person, but something is hearing and answering questions. And though right brain can't speak, it does understand faces, which left brain can't. If this is you, you don't know who your friends and family are in a crowd. This act of cutting exposes two minds in one head, and the talking mind doesn't know there's someone else in the house. The left brain can describe the situation it's in, but but nonetheless will constantly be surprised by right brain's actions and explain them away. There's a question to be asked here. Why, after separation, does right brain not totally freak out, but instead plays along helpfully, answering questions and listening to left brain's dumb stories about what's happening?
It's the best pony? I don't know.
Speculation time. But one answer is the cutting doesn't make right brain a separate intelligence, consciousness, person, but rather it has always been. In normal people, perhaps right brain grows up as a companion without a choice, feeling at first somewhat equal partners, but then as speech develops that it can't participate in, that increasingly becomes the central point of life, it resigns to mutely coordinate with left brain. At this moment, in your normal head, there are two of you watching this video. One having a mind equals blown moment, and the other mentally rolling its eye at the obviousness of it all. In split brains, right doesn't freak out because not a whole lot has really changed. You might not agree and may be arguing right now why it can't be possible. Exactly as we would expect talking left brain to do. Speculation aside, split brain patients show at the very least that in the mind there is a separate something that can hear and understand and respond given the right circumstances. Your brain isn't entirely yours. Who is you? You is too.
That's so creepy. But you know what's great is like, everybody's had those situations where like you're in the middle of doing something and something unexpected happens and then someone asks you, what are you doing? And you just make up a random reason.
Yeah.
Like, or what they're talking about where you see someone's face and you don't recognize them at all, even though you absolutely should know who they are. Like these things happen. And I remember when I saw this, I began to think maybe it's even deeper than that. Maybe there's multiple threads, multiple identities happening at the same time in your brain within each of the hemispheres, you know. Maybe your brain is just all of these different processes running in parallel, doing different things and kind of communicating with each other over some kind of biological enterprise service bus. Yes. Thank you. Yes. It's fascinating. And we'll never know. I mean, maybe someday we will know, but it's, it's incredible. It's incredible stuff. And then we talk about self-driving cars and artificial intelligence, and it's like, sorry guys, those are programs. They're not close enough to even being near what the human brain can do. And maybe to pull it all together, like, you know... If the human brain cannot be a program, then how can we have artificial intelligence? Unless we learn to program something that works like the brain.
Yeah. Yeah.
True. So maybe, maybe it doesn't work with software only. You have to have some kind of hardware component.
Yeah.
That does something special.
Machine learning is a step in the right direction, but even that's a bit of a party trick.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen image recognition algorithms and you think of Shazam and you think of industrial machines that are trained to do things. But this is just function curve fitting is all it is.
Yeah.
You're inputting so much data to the point where like an algorithm emerges, which you don't even understand.
Yeah.
It's just something that is bent by the data, like a wire gets bent by repeated opening and closing of a door. You know, it's like you didn't form it that way, it just happened because you slammed it so many times it became that shape. And you give it totally new input and it's useless. It's completely useless. So, you know, the self-driving car, when a small child dressed like an antelope wearing a cowboy hat jumps in front of the car is going to be like, I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
And, you know, or somebody decides to do something clever, like to put a mirror on the back of their vehicle.
Yeah.
You know, they're carrying a mirror home from IKEA.
Yeah.
And they're just getting destroyed by other cars.
They must have done tests with this.
Yeah, exactly. This would be a great thing to do. Like if I was, if I could own a Tesla with autopilot features, I would spend all day long trying to defeat it. Just trying to defeat it.
Trying like to
what
fuck
other
with
things
it
can
bit.
I do with it? Have you, speaking of which, have you ever owned a Roomba?
No.
Okay.
We're thinking about it.
The Roomba.
Thinking about it, yeah.
This is an absolutely brilliant device. This is so close to the hacker ethic. This is the simplest machine you have ever thought of, because so many other people have tried to develop cleaning robots that have like LiDAR and room learning algorithms and machine learning and I don't know what. The Roomba, if you own one and you watch it clean your living room 40 times in a row, you start to realize that it is, you can program it yourself. Yeah. You see the algorithm emerge because you're smart and you're a programmer and you watch it and you're like, it's got 17 different pre-programmed algorithms. It's randomly switching between them.
Yeah.
When certain sensors are fired in a certain order. And do you know how they coded this? Like, I have no verification for this because they're not going to give away their company secrets, but I know how they coded this. There was a dude sitting in the room with this robot and it was trial and error.
Yeah.
He's like messing around with it and it's cleaning. Like, that didn't work. Oh, what if I change? Maybe if I go from a 4... and X is 4, and now X is 4.1. And then I say, like, every third time, delete Y. Yeah. And then, like, oh, wow, now it's, look what it's doing now. Like, like, and if you've ever programmed a game, you know, like a stupid arcade game, and you're like, this game is too easy, let me make it harder. It says exactly what the Roomba is. Yeah. It's a absolutely moronic, stupid collection of little algorithms, you know, like turn left, turn right, back up, stop, rotate. Go around the corner. If that didn't work, if you tried 5 algorithms in a row, try algorithm 14. Like algorithm 14 always works. It always gets you out of the corner, but it's useless for cleaning. So try that for 9 to 7 seconds, randomly multiplied by the length of how much battery is left. Like the Roomba source code, if it were ever hacked, would be the worst program you've ever seen. It would be written by a child, like, with all kinds of mistakes and comments, like huge sections of it commented out, do not use, do not use, causes battery to overheat. Like bug fix number 17, don't know why it works. It's a complete mess and it works beautifully. It absolutely works beautifully.
But there's the question. That begs the question, how was that? I mean, you have your theory how it was developed, but would... If you gave an artificial intelligence, you know, enough data about how dirty rooms look and whatever, and simulated all that, would it come up with the same solution?
No, it would set your house on fire.
Okay,
all right. I'm absolutely convinced.
I think we're done here.
Absolutely convinced. No, I don't know. Maybe it's true.
I don't know.
Who knows? I mean, that's an interesting question, though, right?
Yeah.
I mean, would it come up with something at least similar to this?
Maybe so. If it could understand the difference between dirt and jewelry, for example, or I don't know. I mean, Roombas still get stuck on power cords and stuff like that, but you know, it's an 80% solution. It works reasonably well almost all of the time, and it almost never gets stuck. And it's fascinating to watch because it's just like a...
Get a fucking Roomba, dude.
I have to.
It's like a simulation, you know?
Yeah.
And the joke is, my wife was like, you bought this robot so you don't have to vacuum anymore.
Yeah.
But as soon as you hit the start button, you watch the robot. I can't leave the room. Like, when it's working, I have to watch it. And this is so sad.
Everyone tells that.
At one point, I actually put a web camera in the living room so I could be downstairs trying to work while the Roomba was going, but I wouldn't have to keep going up to check. Like, oh, what was that sound? Yeah, it's just utterly fascinating. It's a beautiful, beautiful algorithm. It really is. I have so much appreciation for that thing.
All right.
I think that's it.
Yeah, I think so too.
Are we exhausted?
Yeah.
We're exhausted. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Was great.
That was very nice.
Yeah. We have the summary, right?
Yeah, I think this is the hardest episode to summarize in a long time.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know you had to do that.
We don't have to. We could just go freestyle and say goodbye.
I mean, we'll also make chapter marks for this.
Oh my goodness.
So
wow.
That will be hard too.
I think I just give up.
But that's fine. Yeah, I know. I have some chapter marks that may be useful. But yeah, we'll see.
Awesome.
Yeah, so do you want to do anything for summary?
I don't care about it. Okay. I mean, I think it's your turn anyway, but...
That's right. And I say no. I say no.
Okay, sure.
It's a lost cause.
I don't summarize. It's just like...
Completely lost.
Say no. Yeah.
It's hopeless.
I'll summarize it in one word.
Do it.
Beethoven.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's good. Good.
That's all. Yeah. All we have to
maybe
say.
Maybe we should just call the episode Beethoven.
Yeah.
I mean, we have some more titles.
Yeah.
That were all pretty funny. So, yeah. But we'll see what we'll call it. All right.
Great.
Yeah, so thank you very much for coming.
Thanks for having me. It was awesome fun.
Yeah. It's good fun.
And, yeah.
Yeah. I don't think there's anything else to say.
I think there's nothing else to say.
Thanks for listening. And give us feedback, as always, and all that good stuff. And we'll be back sometime. We'll see.
All
right. Maybe a bit more regular.
Hopefully.
I'll miss you.
Aww.
Bye.
Bye.